In tech we trust. Sure about.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to In Tech We Trust, episode 90. We have Mark with us tonight, as you can hear. And, of course, Gabe.
Boo. I'm a scary ghost.
The dude. He's the dude.
Apparently so.
And host, and our lovely host today is?
Is myself, Lauren.
Yay. Yep. So,
in case you notice, there's no English accent coming out, if you couldn't tell by the tone of the voice. But anyway, yeah, we're here to go through another week of tech news, right? So speaking of, we're going to talk a little bit about Slack being down last weekend, Apple becoming an energy company, perhaps, Chef introducing a new open source project for automating applications called Habitat, and Cisco had a release today called Tetration, which is basically analytics for your data center.
What was it called? Titration?
Tetration. It's actually, we hired a bunch of Google folks to come do it, and you know how Google's a really large number? Well, Tetration is actually an even larger number. It's like bigger than, you know, exponentially making something larger. So, you know, I don't know.
Hyperfor.
Titration, which is like a chemistry thing, right?
Right.
That we all learned and forgot.
Right, right. No, tetration, T-E.
Okay. We got that right now. Okay.
So in biz news this week, Microsoft buying LinkedIn, which is probably our biggest story, and then a bunch of other acquisitions, basically. Symantec acquires Bluecoat, maybe getting a new CEO. VMware acquires Arcanet for NSX, and Cisco to invest in Elastifile. But before we get into all that, let's Mark, you were at the HPE conference, is that right?
I did. Yeah, I went as a guest of Calvin Zito, HPE storage guy, and
job interview.
There was. Hey, I went as a freaking independent blogger, man. And
Cool. What we all call it?
That's what we all call it.
So whenever there's a junket for me to go to, I'm an independent blogger. Yeah,
that's right. So I went, yeah. And I should say they paid for my airfare and hotel there. The $250 meal that I had myself at Costa del, whatever it was over at the Wynn, though, I paid for myself. And, you know, I've had a lot better meals than that one in my life. So there you go.
Isn't that always a letdown? Yeah.
I
appreciate the integrity.
I just overate. But that meal, I did actually spring on for myself. And it wasn't over at the Palazzo or Venetian, which is where the conference was. The conference was pretty good. It was just a couple of days. It's a pretty big place. And the new HPE doesn't fill up nearly as, you know, the new HPE doesn't fill it up as much as the old HP did. So it was interesting seeing the downsizing of the company. You know, Meg talked, she gave a little color on what's going on with the services, you know, if you will, spin out with CSC of the old EDS business. That is a spin out. They're forming a new company that'll take place in, you know, roughly about a year, early next spring, a little less than a year. She was pretty good. I thought the keynotes were pretty good. You know, a lot of buzzword bingo and that sort of thing. One of the things that really surprised me when I walked in the show, there were big signs about Helion. It's like, I thought Helion was dead. I thought you guys killed Helion. It's
just
like,
the public.
It's alive and kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the public.
So Helion is still there as you know, software products, cloud products, orchestration products. I got a little bit of color on compostable infrastructure. You know, we've had a lot of fun
with
that.
Did you say compostable?
I mean compostable.
I was like, wait a minute.
Like, you know, you just tell that sucker, throw it in the back of the scrap heap, man. It'll wheedle down. We'll feed it to the hogs.
Well,
you know, we've joked about it in the past and called it compostable. Here, at least Nigel has. And the thing that that word itself just always has struck me as being a wacky one. But they've got a notion of a composer, you know, an orchestrator, the idea that you have dynamic entities and whether you're running on, you know, bare metal VMs or containers, that this thing will be able to, you know, set up your environment and change and be able to help you change with your environment. That's all composable infrastructure is. So I understood that. They're doing interesting things there. I think, with the paring down of the company, it's a very interesting thing, right? Instead of being the big behemoth, they're now a much smaller, I guess, behemoth. And, but they still have problems with marketing and branding and naming things. For instance, now in this new world where they announced that they're going to do that they're going to integrate or bundle Docker with some of their servers. That's kind of nice, right? And the whole thing about that is there's a support service behind that. And so you'll have, supposedly one telephone number to call for your Docker installations. We'll see how well that works, whether HP can pull that off, but that's the intent anyway. I'm a storage guy, of course, and, looking into storage stuff, I went to hear him talk about something called RMC, a product they call Recovery Manager Central. I don't know how in the hell you can name a product Recovery Manager Central. It's just one of those things, right? And so,
why not the Central Recovery Manager?
I know, right?
Even sounds better.
Can we just be a little dyslexic with these letters here? Right. But I came to find out that actually what it is it's a data mover that's part of this new composable infrastructure stuff. Right. So if you want to move data and metadata from one storage system to another, use this thing called RMC, Recovery Manager Central, And so while they're getting some parts of this right, I think, they're doing interesting things with technology. They still can't get out of their own name or their own way for naming things and branding, just like all other big companies, like Microsoft and, everybody else has a hard time naming things. But overall, it was a good week. Glad I went. There you go.
Sweet.
Yeah, that sounds good. Was there any technology that you were particularly excited about? I mean, anything great that you saw?
Actually, this Recovery Manager Central, the thing with the horrible name, right? I think, in the idea of how you're going to have persistent storage for containers and how you're going to move and manage data in that environment, you need something that will provide that change of reference, that change of locality, and be able to do that. And so this is part of the underpinnings of how all that will work, in this composable. So I thought that was actually pretty cool. I mean, it was an update. It was Recovery Manager Central 3.0.
And there's a longer strategy at work that I'm seeing from HP that I think when it finally comes to its maturity date will actually make a lot more sense than the kind of the half steps or half measures that they've done over the last couple of years that don't on their individual efforts look like a big deal, but when taken in totality make a lot more sense. I think they're definitely betting longer term than sort of incremental shorter gains. That's also the benefit that Meg has as well as, IBM have that, yeah, the stock price matters, but it doesn't rule every single action that they have. And I think if they're betting on a longer-term viability and reimagining themselves with these changes that are taking place, these things don't happen overnight. So, for them, a three-year strategy to get to kind of some area where they think they'll be massively dominant is more along the lines of what I see. The move towards their own container management and integrating container technologies into the base, server-level system allows them to bypass and kind of control their own destiny in many respects. Because, if you're just a construct to run some kind of Linux, broken down Linux controller, bare metal, and then a bunch of container apps on top of it, you bypass having to lean heavily on VMware. If you bring your own container management and orchestration tool set in and they actually work, then you can bypass all the other third-party players, and then you build a big ecosystem around it, and you can sell a whole full-stack solution to a customer. That's what I see kind of happening.
I think that's what they're doing there, Gabe. And, there was a lot of snarkiness when Meg talked about the Docker deal and, people on Twitter were saying, well, they're just trying to surf millennials. It's not that at all.
No. It's not like they can make a pivot that quickly anyway. I mean, look how long it takes them to name stuff poorly.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about, one thing that they're doing that's interesting, like, for instance, this thing is this Recovery Manager Central. This was older technology that they've had. And the fact that it's 3.0, speaks to the fact that it was something else that was already there. But to your point, they're finding these pieces that they have. They're looking for assets and they're saying, how can we make a, you know, not just a bigger storage, how can we build a bigger infrastructure? You know, how can we do this? So this thing that started as just recovery management stuff is now being seen as a way to do data movement. And, you know, that's an example of how these little things, they get grown up, they get recognized by other parts of the company, and then they get implemented. And so I think it's real interesting. It will be interesting to see how well they're able to keep momentum going. You know, as they downsize this business, are they going to be able to maintain enough revenues with the products that they have to make this, to make the shift that they have to make?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds really interesting. It'll be something to watch for sure. Well, speaking of recovery, I guess, Slack was down last weekend for a couple of days. Did you guys notice? I did not.
Fucking nuts.
I did not even notice.
I stopped getting messages from Slackbot.
And I was driving, and I'm like, I'm trying to do some stuff on Slack, and it won't let me. And then I had to just basically pay attention to the road. I'm like, what?
Oh, God. How boring. God, you must have been bored out of your mind. I'm glad you didn't kill yourself.
I was so pissed off. I could not even get over it.
Apparently, they've figured out what the problem is, although I didn't find an article that actually said it. But everything's been fixed now, and it shouldn't happen again. So, Gabe, you should be safe. Right.
So far today has been good. I've been able to post multiple pieces of spam.
Storage problem?
Probably.
The article
probably
I read,
Seth.
Yeah, didn't say, but just that they had figured out the problem. So
they figured out, and then they're not telling us what it is.
Isn't that bullshit? In the little research I did,
it must be a fundamental flaw with the platform.
must be like hockey. Well, we have a lower body injury.
Well, all right. Moving on. Apple to become an energy company. I thought this was interesting because I personally follow SolarCity a little bit, which is another company Elon Musk is involved with. He's one of the, I think, board members or something. He is talking about turning, it's basically a solar panel, you know, manufacturer. And he's talked about turning SolarCity into an energy company, like a utility eventually. So interesting that Apple has come out with this. Did you guys read anything or find anything interesting about this story?
Well, no, other than it makes a lot of sense. If you can buy enough land and set up massive solar production, and you can sell it back to the utilities during the middle of the day when they have a big down, you know, you can do very well. And Apple is a company that just consumes a lot of power. It makes sense for them to generate their own electricity. They don't have to do it in the donut or whatever over here in Santa Clara. They can do it wherever the sun shines the most, out in the desert, you know, out in the flatlands. And they pump it back in, and basically they pump it into the grid, and it becomes, the excess becomes, you know, is money that they make. If they generated less electricity, it would still be the right thing for them to do. But I guess they're planning to generate so much electricity that the utilities will pay them enough. First they'll consume all that they make, and the utilities will buy whatever excess they generate.
It's kind of like how Amazon made AWS, right? Just had extra and started selling it.
Yeah, I mean, but this is something that, you know, school districts everywhere should use and all kinds of things, right? Where they've got, if you've got land and you've got tops of buildings and you can generate electricity from it, that's great. In the state of California, there's this thing where, you know, there's a division between what you can do with operating budget, you know, for things like electricity and keeping the lights on in schools, and then the budget that pays teachers. And these things are separate. And it turns out, they're combined, but it's been so long since I've looked at it. It really makes a lot of sense for schools in particular to generate their own electricity, sell it back to the utilities, because they can really cut down their expenses that way. Any business that has enough land that, you know, can do solar, you know, it really needs to look at this.
Maybe they should buy Nest from Google, and then they can tap into the power of the Internet of Things.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I think that was like actually the initial intention. But, I mean, I think if you're a utility, if you're a global utility, put it this way, most utility organizations are localized, right? And I think that the challenge that they're going to face is the same challenge that, say, you know, WorldCom and some of these startup telecoms did during the 90s prior to the dot-com crash. You know, they were piggybacking on the main carrier's copper. And I don't know how Solar City, you know, obviously it's solar power, so, you know, they're going to be generated. They don't really have to carry pipes to people's individual houses, but that there's a service organization, they're going to have to expand significantly. If they want to get really awesome into economies of scale and whatnot, they're going to have to go much more than the smaller regionalized areas that they have to deal with where, you know, there's sunlight. I mean, there are whole swaths of the country that just, I don't think they could ever leverage solar as utilization. And is there a big enough market to compete against the likes of, you know, an entrenched SDG&E or SoCal Edison or any of the major, you know, essentially publicly sponsored utilities?
Yeah, I mean, 120 years ago, before there was, you know, electrical distribution, if you want to do manufacturing, if you were in milling or something, you generate your own power. You did that, right? And so this is just another way for a company, and Apple, I think Apple's really smart to do it. We've got the money right now. We can invest in massive solar farms. We'll just generate a whole lot of stuff. And even though they're not using that electricity themselves directly, it goes into the grid. It gets, you know, it gets purchased by a utility and bam, it's the same thing. It's just a swap. It's a power swap that they're doing. And so companies, when you look at how the electrical market here was manipulated back in the Enron years,
yeah,
and, you know, that it may be unstable.
Oh, shipping energy out of the state, bringing it back in, I mean, and playing games with it. And that was like, you know, that was partly the problem of the, you know, the state government as well as everybody else is kind of being asleep at the switch. You know, I think part of the challenge too, though, that solar is always going to have is storing energy for use.
Yes.
And it makes sense if you're Elon Musk that you own the world's largest battery production facility. And by the way, now you can sell the solar panels, part of your solar company, and then you have a very good piece of battery technology that you can leverage for off-peak utilization.
Oh, for Musk, it makes all sense in the world. You want to sell electric cars? You want to make electricity available all over the place and make it as cheap as possible?
Yeah, and it does, right? But also there's going to be an issue with a finite amount of resources that we can dedicate those, you know, those rare earth metals required for long lasting usable batteries and then the recycling. I mean, there's a whole industry that can spring up over just that one part of the supply chain.
Yeah.
And it will drive costs for things up higher as things get scarce. If we're talking about, you know, a one nation shift towards electric vehicles, just the United States. Let's say that there's 300 million cars here. That's a lot of batteries, man.
Yeah, we'll have to go to war with China to get those rare metals.
Yeah.
I should say Solar City isn't necessarily becoming an energy company. That's just been, you know, discussed.
I don't know. I still think solar is a stopgap measure towards something else. I think that we still have significant challenges there. You go look at all the issues that Ivanpah has had out in the Mojave. Outside of there being like the ultimate, it's like a giant Kentucky Fried Chicken facility. Because every time a bird flies by that place, it catches on fire and dies. Just, it's true. Thousands of birds catching fire at the world's largest solar farm. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh.
Is that going on?
Oh yeah.
Birds just spontaneously combusting?
Surrounding the colony, literally fry them out of the sky. Temperatures reaching usually 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Like above just the panels,
the reflection.
Oh my god!
Put it in the chat. It is bonkers. But you know, I mean, that's just, you know, there's an unforeseen consequence, right? You know, Skynet, the bird destroyer.
No.
Like, I wonder how they taste. I mean, I wonder if it cooks them completely.
Yeah, what happened to the butterflies, man? It's just poof, they're gone.
You want to know what happened to all the bees? They're being they're being incinerated in the sky.
Yeah,
so much for that green energy source. Well, moving on. Speaking of habitat, I guess.
Hey, yeah, let's go to habitat.
Good pivot.
That's a hot topic.
Chef has announced this open source project called Habitat. Gabe, I think you posted it.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
It looked interesting to me. It always does. I mean, I look at the orchestration companies, and they're starting to mature, and they're starting to have to compete against the platform as a service organizations and some of these other groups that are out there. And it is interesting from the standpoint that, you know, that they are making these pivots towards areas where, you know, way up higher the stack, right? We tried to take things and make it really simple from orchestration, from the daily workloads or virtual machine creation and things of that nature. Now moving more towards, let's do that same thing at the application layer. And, you know, some people may poo-poo it to a certain extent, but I think it's an interesting direction to go. And the fact that they open sourced it is a smart play, because unlike some of the, you know, companies that have, that make moves into open source, Chef already has a business that keeps them running. That's their day job and that allows them to generate revenue. It, compared to Docker and some of these other technologies where they gave away kind of the best bits of the main platform is for free, and now they're struggling to, you know, generate revenue. Chef already has a revenue stream. Now if they want to pivot into an open source orchestration layer for at the app, at app level, well then boom, now you can do that, and it's not gonna, you know, you're not gonna sit there and beg, borrow, and steal to get money to keep your day business going.
So what exactly are we automating here? I mean, is it the modeling of the application and then deployment to public or private clouds, or like what exactly does that look like?
At its most elementary level, it's application automation, right? And so, you know, and then doing that from an open source standpoint and perspective and integrating with a lot of the different tools that are out there today. And if I look at it from the standpoint of I'm an enterprise company and I struggle with just the basic concepts of, like, say, DevOps, anything that will allow me or help me or assist me to do that, and leverage my own internal people, and then maybe even take it from an open source standpoint where I'm not having to go out and pay big money to somebody like BMC or somebody of that nature, is an alternative route, right? And you're seeing that's why things like OpenStack and containerization are being successful, primarily because they're competing routes of delivery compared to what tends to be expensive with something like a VMware product. Or so if I'm not, if I'm cost conscious and I'm at the sufficient scale that I want to do something like this, now here's an open source project that I can integrate. And by the way, you know, if I want to pay a little bit more money, I can go and get the Chef orchestration part to address other pieces of it. I mean, I look at it from the standpoint of it, it's like alternative streams of consciousness or integration with tooling that's being commonly used as we kind of make this shift towards next generation technologies.
Yeah, I imagine, especially moving towards that future of containers and whatnot, the application gets more and more complex as if it isn't already. So anything we can do to orchestrate and automate.
Yeah, you know, one of the things they're really trying to focus on is all of the lessons that, you know, the web giants have crafted and seeing how we can apply some of that to the mere mortals in the industry, i.e. the regular enterprise. I mean, the way that they've crafted and developed and, you know, mastered their applications are very specific to their core line of business tools. And that's why they built the tools the way they did. And a lot of times people see that and go, oh, you know, why can't I just use Open Compute Project and some fancy open source software for my enterprise, you know, 8,000 enterprise applications that I'm delivering? And I'm like, well, reality is like you can, but you're going to struggle mightily as you kind of have this massive learning curve. And then there's going to be a bunch of limitations that you're not even going to be able to run into. Oh, and by the way, you have no experience in supply chain management and all these other things that come into context. And you don't have, you know, 2,000 programmers that can dedicate to this. Anybody who takes, you know, that lets you accelerate that journey to getting there, and that's what I think they're trying to do here with Habitat is, you know, is giving customers an alternative and a choice. We should have Matt Ray on from Chef to talk about it. He knows a lot about it.
I would imagine he would. Well, moving on to Tetration from Cisco that was just announced today. I won't go on and on about it, but since I always have to listen to you guys talk about storage, you know. So basically, yes, it's analytics for your data center. I know, Gabe, you know a little bit about it too. It allows you to have basically kind of like a DVR in your data center for the last year or whatever. You can see, of course, visible real-time, almost real-time analytics, I should say. It doesn't do a sampling of data. It actually, you know, takes into account every single packet that flows through your network. It gives you forensics. It actually helps you with application dependency mapping, which, of course, is helpful with Cisco ACI as well in creating policy around that. So a really interesting play, I think. I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that.
IoT is something that Cisco's betting big on, and this is probably another piece of that, right? Because if I build an analytics engine that's rack scale and pluggable as a pod that I drop in to an organization or a company or whoever wants to do this number crunching at massive scale, it's a product that I can deliver. It's a space that's kind of, I think we all kind of can see that this is a space that's kind of growing, even though it doesn't really affect us in our daily lives from how we interact with technology. It's kind of very specialized in that respect, but it's going to have a much larger impact than I think we anticipate.
Well, I know we kind of poo-pooed it, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, talking about Internet of Things, but I agree with you. I think it's going to be a very, very big deal. You know, there's a lot of dollars to be made there. We'll see how it evolves over time, but you know, the industry's always spent a lot, and it's not always visible or obvious. But you know, once you know, I think people are just betting that there's going to be a lot of profit, a lot of business there, and you got to be able to get in on the ground level if you're going to be there.
Yeah, at some point we'll be able to actually derive real answers from our big data.
At some point, yes.
And that's just it. It's like it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, I think if you're a data center company, which at its heart, you know, Cisco is a data center and networking company, to have analytics and information that you can draw from is part of that. You know, the tools that you're selling, and whether it's from data collection, you know, and then, you know, web user analytics and all these other bits and pieces that all kind of move together, and you can orchestrate that as a solution that is somewhat turnkey. I don't know, you know, what it will eventually take a form as. You know, it's additional value that you can sell to your customer, and if somebody's going to go out there and buy it. I mean, it doesn't look like a whiptail.
No, the whiptail probably won't be a part of that. We're pretty sure that one. But you know, is it going to be 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, or what? I don't think it's going to be 2 years. It's a long ways out.
Well, I mean, I'd be curious, to be honest, you know, like, because between this and some of the other news with Cisco is, you know, how much MPLS affected these shifts and change and movement, and do some of these things come to fruition now and are dumped off or what? I think there's still a lot of, you know, over the course of the next couple of months, we'll see a lot of interesting news coming out of Cisco as Chuck starts to continue to reimage it in his own vision versus what it was prior.
Yeah, fair enough. I can't really add much to that. So what do you say
we
move on to
fired?
That's right. What do you say we then I'd be on the independent blogger junket as well.
We can go to dinner and Dutch treat.
There we go.
What's a Dutch treat?
We both pay.
Oh, Gabe, it's not
you
one of those
make
weird
the other
things
person pay,
like,
don't you?
It's not something I have to go look up on Urban Dictionary.
Gabe is unfamiliar with the concept, apparently.
I always end up paying.
Anyway,
here comes the Dutch treat. Hold your nose. This sounds bad.
There, who?
Oh. Oh, no. Speaking of paying for things, no. Microsoft buys LinkedIn. Now, we had a bit of a conversation about this on the back channels, whether it would be good or bad. Unfortunately, Nigel and Yadin aren't here to be the ones that were really talking about it. But, yeah, basically, what do you guys think? I don't have a problem with it. I don't think I put as much stock into LinkedIn as apparently all of the people who wrote the articles about it do, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you guys think?
This is a really big deal for Microsoft. I think it's very smart. I went and did a ridecast with you, Dean, earlier in the week. So, you know, you can look that up on YouTube. Maybe I'll give you the notes for it. But you know, I called up you, Dean. Hey, let's talk about this. So and he turned into a instant expert on it, which is kind of fun. But you know, Microsoft really doesn't have any real estate on most Windows phones, because there aren't Windows phones anymore, on most iPhones and Google phones, right? If you think about it, what apps do most people use on those phones? The answer is none, right? And you could say, well, yeah, maybe Word, you know, maybe Office 365, maybe those things, but they really don't have anything that is a solid mobile presence. And that is what LinkedIn gives them. LinkedIn gives them an app that a lot of people use every day on any platform. And so, you know, we were talking about Cisco and the new CEO at Cisco trying to change, you know, the products, the focus of the company. This is clearly Satya Nadella saying, you know, we're going to be in mobile, and we're going to be there as a software. We're going to be there as a services company, and we're going to be on everybody's phone. And they know they're not going to do it with their old PC products. I don't care what anybody says. You don't need Word, Excel, PowerPoint, any of that on a phone, right? But LinkedIn, there you go. And I don't think it's the end of the acquisitions that Microsoft is going to make. They could have spent $30 billion, and I don't think it would have been too much. They badly need this. They badly need to be on everybody's mobile device. So is LinkedIn on every mobile device? No. Is it on a lot of mobile devices that a lot of people use in this business? Yes. Right. So, you know, people said things about it. It's a way that they'll, Microsoft will be able to sell products. Who gives a shit? I don't think Satya gives a shit whether it's a way to sell products or what. It's just a way for Microsoft to be relevant in the world. And they were moving on Ballmer's tracks to non-relevance. And now they're on Satya Nadella's tracks to trying to being relevant. Great move.
I think that's a great point, Mark. What do you think about them, back to IoT and analytics, I guess, using it to, in a very Google way of just collecting analytics about their users?
Damn straight, I mean, they will. They absolutely will. Yeah.
And I can't blame
right
them
right
for
next
that.
To people who searched also searched for will be, would you like to buy this application?
Right. So one article pointed out, so now Bing can tell us if we have cancer and, you know, whatever LinkedIn will tell us, maybe if we're going to lose our job or something.
It's just going to be like, you can say, who stalked me today on LinkedIn?
Or on my case, they know that I'm searching for jobs on LinkedIn. They probably say, you could really use Excel to track your job applications to make reports to the state of California.
Oh, God, Excel.
That sounds awesome.
Isn't that funny? I mean, that is what I use Excel for these days, is to keep a track of the jobs that I apply for so I can, right, you know, do my unemployment thing with the state of California.
Right.
That's what I use Excel for, you know.
Hey, that works.
I still don't know how to work a pivot table.
Oh, God, no. I can do very simple things.
So, Gabe, what do you think of this deal?
It's hard for me to really, not rationalize, but understand. I see your point where they're going. It's like, you know, it's another way to reach into mobile. It's another way to stay relevant. But then I'm just not sure, you know, what the monetization factor already looks like and how healthy LinkedIn was from that standpoint. I mean, they are one of the, you know, the traditional very large web companies that get a lot of traffic. It is a social platform. I mean, I use LinkedIn a lot. Not so much to spam my own crap out there, but, you know, in terms of relating with or reaching out or building contacts with customers and people that I work with in the industry. And that, from that respect, you know, I mean, I don't send resumes anymore. I mean, I think a lot of us don't send resumes anymore. People go to our LinkedIn page and look at what we have, and then they contact us. You know, and it's interesting from that respect, you know, and how does Microsoft turn that into something that they can leverage and use remains to be seen. There's that.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, how will they monetize it? It's a good question. I think one of the answers to that is they were printing money so long and they have so much cash built up that it really doesn't matter to them how they monetize it. They're borrowing from the massive flood of influx of money in the past. They're saying, you know what, we'll get there.
I don't, you know, it's like, I don't know how bad Microsoft needs to make money. I mean,
right?
Let's not let you. I mean, they have plenty of cash. Put it that way. I mean, and obviously they need to still make money. They're a very large organization, but they continue to reach out and reshape and rebuild themselves as something completely different than the company that they started out as. You know, and that's to be the norm. I mean, they're still fairly young in terms of, you know, long-term corporate viability.
Yeah,
it's not even 30 years, is it?
Even if they can't directly monetize, I mean, again, the information gleaned on pretty much anything, you know, the analytics of the users could lead to some long-term financial wellness there as well.
I don't know if that's what, I mean, I pay for a premium subscription on LinkedIn because I use it for communication in that respect.
Right.
And it gleans you a little bit more insight. I know, you know, in the recruiting industry, across all types of spectrum, LinkedIn completely destroyed Monster and several other recruiting boards.
Oh, yeah.
And almost everybody goes to LinkedIn. And if you're looking for a job, you can pay $24 a month and get, you know, your exposure rate up there as well. Yeah, I just don't know how profitable that is compared to the infrastructure and all the assets required to work, you know, to build it and to keep it relevant and fresh. And it's a continual living organism type of thing.
Well, yeah, there are costs going on. I want to say one other thing about this, though, and that is congratulations to LinkedIn for getting there. It was just a few years ago. I thought this was just a butthole. I hated LinkedIn. I hated going there. It was a place where you could go see people whizzing on each other. It was just awful. And I think they've really cleaned it up. I thought they made it much better.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I get the emails. It's mostly to see who's snooping, I think.
I get a lot of unsolicited bull. Sometimes I get, you know, like requests for jobs that are completely incorrect.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's the same thing as like the spam emails I still get. You know, it's like, oh, I see that you've worked with Citrix. We have a help desk position available.
Right.
I'm like, really, dude? Did yeah. you look at anything in my profile at all? And in that respect, it's kind of weird. There's still a lot of phishing and spam scams on there all the time as well. But legitimately, though, I've used it to great to definitely benefit myself in the course of the years. I mean, the last three jobs I've had were through LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So.
Well, moving on to Symantec acquiring Bluecoat and perhaps getting a new CEO. I forget who posted this one. Was it one of you guys?
I might have posted it. I wasn't really that interested in it. I mean, okay. Other than the fact that Bluecoat had been around for quite a while. And, you know, security is one of those spaces that's really, you know, security, AI, VR, IoT. Those are kind of like the four that are constantly in the news and being discussed and talked about.
Yeah.
So well, from that respect, it's interesting.
Yeah, you know, this gets back to a lot of the initial business that Symantec was, right? And how badly did they get off track over the years to lose that this was their business? So they, you know, end up having to go out and acquire Bluecoat. I think it's a good move. I think
it's funny because the company with the crazy CEO, which was McAfee,
right.
did better than the company with the huge portfolio of products.
Oh yeah, that guy Larson at McAfee was a nut job.
I was thinking John McAfee.
Yeah, McAfee.
Well, that guy too. Oh my God! Who's in the thank you
Brazilian jungle with assault weapons taking right. peyote?
yeah, winning.
The Charlie Sheen of tech CEOs.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Sorry about that, Larson, but you were a nut job too.
Apparently, you were crazy too.
Yeah, not nearly as crazy. So Symantec completely dropped the ball on their security stuff over the years. And the company's, you know, been struggling and trying to figure out how to make a go of it. And they buy a company and they get a CEO in the deal, right? And so it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. If Bluecoat's going to be able to become a big enough product, they can sell worldwide and to enough large customers for enough profits. I mean, you know, they need business steroids. Is Bluecoat going to be business steroids? Is the new CEO coming in going to have the juice to make this much larger global company work, right? Those great questions. They're betting the farm on that, and we'll see. I mean, here's the thing, right? If this doesn't work out, then what does that say about Symantec?
That they're bad at acquiring companies.
No, if this doesn't work, it's worse than that. If you acquire a company and take on their CEO and it doesn't work, what does that say?
I was not putting two and two together.
Yeah, you're basically punting on your management team. And you're saying, here's our new product line. I mean, if you know, when you do an acquisition and a company comes in, you know, there's always a question of, you know, who's on first, who's going to take over, what's going to be the starring product, all that kind of stuff, right? In this case, it's quite obvious. Symantec is saying, we're going to turn the keys over to Bluecoat. We think we've right. screwed up. We think we've screwed up enough that we're basically going to change everything except our name, right? Whoa. Why don't they just name the company Bluecoat?
Yeah.
And why call it Symantec anymore? Screw that. It's Bluecoat.
I never did understand that name, Bluecoat.
Yeah, I know. Is that something if we looked it up, we'd say not safe for work or what? I mean, you want that to be safe for work.
Well, I think of normally, like the red yes. coats. Were we the blue coats? I don't know.
I mean, it's better than blue.
Speaking of security.
There we go.
You just bleep the what did Gabe say? Oh, sorry, it's been a long day.
Well, VMware acquired a company called Arkinet for their NSX product line. I looked a little bit into Arkinet. It's been around for a few years now. Basically, I think it will offer a lot of visibility that doesn't already exist for NSX. But beyond that, you know, I think it's just another acquisition. Did you guys have anything interesting to say about that?
It's going in that black hole or black box of NSX. It's a black box inside VMware. Nobody knows what goes on there.
Cisco to invest in Elastifile. Gabe, I know you posted that one.
Yeah.
What's of interest there?
I mean, it's a Israeli startup. It was, you know, they were a round. Actually, I talked to somebody who was looking for people. I never actually talked with the company, but I did talk to somebody who was closely aligned with them and said, hey, this is one to take a look at. And I remember looking at it and going, man, that's a really awful website. And I'm like, that's typical of small startup without a lot of people on it.
From Israel.
I mean, Yeah, from Israel. It's another, yet another storage company out of Israel, where like the great incubator of storage minds and technology all kind of build up these great concepts and then have a really hard time struggling to break into the traditional market. So they, you know, this is yet another seeded thing, you know, another bet. I mean, Cisco's done a lot of really interesting investments lately. They invested in Stratoscale, which was yet another. It was another Israeli infrastructure, you know, kind of an open stack in a box type of technology. There's a couple others that I've heard of that they've invested in that is probably not super public. They continue to, like I said, be this great incubator or seed. They're the who's the guy's name on what's the damn show that we Silicon Valley. He's the, they're the Bachman of
big, the Ehrlich Bachman.
The Ehrlich Bachmans. We're going to change Cisco's name to Aviato.
Please don't.
Yeah, Lauren, you don't have to comment on that.
No comment.
No, I mean, no, but I mean, in reality, no, they are spreading. I mean, they have a war chest. They have a bunch of money. They have the means to, you know, in the same way that HP does, go out there and kind of bet on future bets and see if some of these things shake out for them. And, you know, they can spin a lot of those products in.
I'm giving this the kiss of death. Cisco doing anything with storage, it's just awful, right? They've never freaking gotten it. I don't think they ever will. You know, so go ahead, surprise me, Cisco, and make good on this. But I think you just wasted $15 million. Because you did it, Cisco. You know, nobody at Cisco ever gets storage. They think they do. They think it's easy. They think it's easier than networking. They never get it right. Okay, so you're buying something. It's going to be some super scalable file system. Is it going to be object? You know, is it going to work with container? Is it going to be another whiptail? What is this? You know, I am such a non-believer in Cisco and storage. This is like, prove it to me. You got a long ways to go.
Well, because they, like, yeah, you're completely right. And is, I don't want to badmouth it too much because I still have friends and stuff. I got a lot of friends who work over there.
I
was one of the people on the inside for a while, but I mean, it's like, I said the same thing on my way out the door. I'm like, no one here gets, they have no concept. Some of the people that they put in positions to make decisions about where the direction should be have no clue either. And it's never been on the same tier of influence that Route Switch and
they should have given it to the American Diabetes Association or anybody else, you know, they'd get more out of it.
Didn't I say they should have brought like Donatelli or somebody in to kind of run the storage
God.
Build a true, legit storage industry?
I hope that guy never resurfaces again.
They should have brought somebody in, to, like a big dog to come in. Hey, pick whatever company you need to buy that's out there with
that
assets.
That guy's washed up and spent too. He's done with. He's over.
Right, bring David Flynn in. Bring somebody in who's done this, who's built things up from the ground up and understands the industry or something of that nature,
right,
and can actually run and build a storage division at the same level as the other things. And then you'll have all three legs of the stool, and then you can layer your Internet of Tacos and, you know, everything else on top of it. But I agree, Mark. They don't get storage, and they still –
you know, they Elastifile may have had a bright future at one point. Now, this is not a buyout. This is just an investment. Right. It's they already took in $44 million from a bunch of other players. And this is a strategic investment. So it may not kill it altogether. The poison might only go so far.
Well, I mean, it's not like they have a product they're selling right now anyway.
Right. So it's just a strategic. Maybe I overreacted, but still.
On that note, I think that's it for us tonight. You guys have any closing notes?
Lauren, you had nothing to do with that attitude I just expressed. That's all
I just keep quiet and, you know, of course we're allowed to.
God, you're so much smarter than I am. I just open my mouth.
We're allowed to, you know, have opinions about the companies that other people out here work for, right? So, you know, I think it's good, but I just can't say anything, so.